Welcome to God and Country Biblical Exposition. This week's subject is COVID-19 again. It's all the media is talking about, and I realize that it's a terrible distraction. I realize that the media is not covering the more important stories of the day. But this is where the culture is at. This is the machinations of the left. And a lot of good people are losing their jobs over these vaccine mandates. So specifically, the discussion for today is vaccine religious exemptions. There's all sorts of confusions about these exemptions, not only in the public, but also among HR directors and the courts. You know, despite what people think, the law is not clear or settled in this matter. So I'd like to explain how to properly argue for religious exemptions, but more important, explain the biblical basis for opposing vaccine mandates. And there are some great spiritual moral lessons to be learned here in this current issue, where we can learn the difference between biblical morality and the false teaching of utilitarianism. This is a Colossians chapter 2, verse 8 moment. Colossians 2, 8, see to it that no one takes you captive through philosophy and empty deception, according to the traditions of men, according to the elementary principles of this world, rather than according to Christ. And today I hope to show how this vaccine situation has huge biblical implications. So let's get to it. I have about 25 pages of scattered notes in front of me, single-spaced, 10-point font. This is probably going to have to be a two-part series, if not three-part series. But let me begin with some caveats, provisos, and disclaimers. First, a word to the YouTube content moderators. Everything I say in this video is based upon facts and truth. Everything has been carefully researched and comes from multiple legitimate sources. There is no misinformation in this video. Now, if you take down this video, you're taking it down because you're suppressing the truth. You want people to get vaccinated, so you think it's right to cover up any reports of adverse reactions, protests, or information about religious objections because you see the truth as negotiable. You think in terms of situation ethics, the greater good, which is a false basis for ethics, and I'm going to address that in this video. For example, Twitter labeled misleading an obituary of a young mother who died from blood clots brought on by the vaccine. Quote from the obituary, Jessica died from COVID-19 vaccine-induced thrombotic blood clots. Jessica was an exceptionally healthy and vibrant 37-year-old young mother with no underlying health conditions. She died after having a reaction to the J&J shot and after going to the University of Washington's Medical Center twice to seek help. She had been vehemently opposed to taking the vaccine, knowing she was in good health and of young age, thus not at risk for serious illness. In her mind, the known and unknown risks of the unproven vaccine were more of a threat. But slowly, day by day, her freedom to choose was stripped away. Her passion to be actively involved in her children's education, which included being a room mom, was once again blocked by government mandate. So she took the vaccine against her better judgment. Twitter, their fact checkers, called the stated cause of her death misleading. Well, how could it be misleading? It's the truth. And Twitter even added the disclaimer that the vaccines were proven to be safe. Now, people may claim there is only a very small risk of a bad reaction to the vaccines, but adverse reactions are still the truth. And when it happens to your family, it's not a 1% chance, it's 100% reality. If YouTube takes down this video, it's taking down the truth. YouTube is owned by Google. And Google's motto is, don't be evil. Let's see if that's still true. A second proviso. Even though I see some serious problems with the COVID-19 vaccine, I am not against all vaccines. But I've always stood up for the freedom of even the most radical anti-vaxxers, because they are such a tiny percentage of the population. And even with anti-vaxxers, enough people are getting vaccinated so that there is herd immunity. Even with anti-vax families, we're not seeing outbreaks of measles or polio or whooping cough or whatever. Scientifically, anti-vaxxers actually serve as a needed control group. A control group is that scientific term for a group of people in an experiment who get the placebo so that a comparison can be made. The outcome of those taking the vaccine can be compared with those who don't take the vaccine. If the vaccinated population has a higher incidence of autoimmune disease or autism, that tells us something. But if everyone is vaccinated for a particular disease, and if some medical issue arises, you know, it's really difficult to tell if it's related to the vaccine unless doctors have a non-vaccinated control group to look at. And medical science has a track record of pushing medicines that are later discovered to be harmful. So the anti-vaxxers should not be considered a problem for many reasons, not the least of which is that they serve as a control group. I mean, I could do an entire program entitled, "This is Not a Pandemic of the Unvaccinated." So merely from a scientific point of view, I see anti-vaxxers serving a good purpose. You know, they may be taking personal risks, but they actually help the science. Now, that point is not even a matter of biblical conviction or morality, except that may have something to do with just general biblical wisdom. But it's just good science. Now, in New Jersey, even before COVID, over the past few years, some legislators have jumped on the bandwagon of everyone needs to be vaccinated. It's unfair otherwise. So they try to outlaw religious and conscientious exemptions from vaccines. And by doing so, they fueled and they started an anti-vax movement in the state. These legislators, in trying to force vaccinations, have publicized, rallied, and expanded the number of anti-vaxxers. I mean, if you tell people, don't look to your right, everyone is going to look to their right. And this applies to these COVID-19 mandates. The more the government mandates vaccines, the more the public grows suspicious. People automatically assume there must be something wrong with it. There must be a downside since the government has to mandate it. But you say, ah, wait a minute. The government has to mandate these vaccines because the CDC is smarter and people are ignorant and misinformed when it comes to vaccines. Like children need to be forced to eat their broccoli. Well, Carnegie Mellon University did a study this summer in regard to vaccine hesitancy across educational levels. And they found that those with higher levels of education are more hesitant to take these vaccines. Surprise, surprise. Many health professionals are unwilling to take the vaccine, like what's going on in New York State. Norway Health, New York's largest healthcare provider, had to fire 1,400 employees for refusing to take the vaccine. What's with these people? Are they stupid? No, they understand medical risk. And many have already had COVID. They have natural immunities. The more educated a person is, the more they know about the field of medicine, politics, ethics, social policy, the more they know about alternatives and risks. It's actually those with lower education who will unquestionably follow government mandates and believe the so-called experts. So don't assume the popular narrative about why some people are not taking these vaccines. So those are my provisos. Let's get into the religious exemption issue here. As of right now, the CDC states that only 57% of the U.S. is vaccinated. As far as those above age 65, 86% have been fully vaccinated. But the CDC, the pharmaceutical companies, many politicians, pro-vaxxers have a real problem on their hands. There was a spike in COVID cases this summer, despite all of the vaccinations. And all of the public is not buying into vaccine mandate. So the powers that be, namely Democrat politicians, believe that the solution is to mandate the vaccines to require it by law. But because of the Constitution, you cannot force people to take vaccines. So what are you going to do? I mean, throw them in jail? So the alternative for some politicians is to use workplace OSHA laws to deny the unvaxxed the right to show up at work unvaxxed. Hence, you can get the unvaccinated in their pocketbooks and thereby force them to take the vaccine. It's quite insidious if you think about it. Definitely in principle, it's a foreshadowing of Revelation chapter 13. Now, if we were in Soviet Russia or Communist China or North Korea, there'd be no issue here. The state simply does what it wants to do. But here in America and in the West, there is this Christian concept of human rights, where people have intrinsic rights that are above the authority of the state. First Amendment of our Constitution, Congress shall make no law respecting the establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof or abridging the freedom of speech or of the press or of the right of people to peaceably assemble and to petition the government for a redress of grievances. So implicit in the Constitution is this whole concept of human rights, where the state can't violate the individual conscience of the citizen, where the state is limited in what it can force people to do. And this is codified also in the 1964 Civil Rights Act. Now, the state could mandate certain activities, taxes, a vaccine in some situations. But for that to happen, the state would have to show in the courts that the pandemic is extremely serious, that there are no other treatments, alternatives, or other accommodations that can be made except to be vaccinated. And the state would have to show that vaccines actually work. And all that is a high hurdle. Now, a word has to be said here about these federal government mandates that employees must be vaccinated. No law has been passed. The federal mandate doesn't exist except for federal employees. And although Biden said that OSHA was going to issue a ruling requiring vaccines for workers, OSHA has not issued any ruling. And the Biden administration knows that when OSHA makes that ruling, the constitutionality of OSHA making this ruling apart from Congress is going to be challenged immediately in the Supreme Court. Congress makes the law, not OSHA or the executive branch. So it is just individual companies that are forcing employees to get vaccinated without any federal law in place. These CEOs are just personally in agreement with forced vaccinations. And another factor is the states. Some governors are making up their own rules, such as Newsom is requiring all public school children in California to get the vaccine, and he has a mutiny on his hands. So that's the general human rights issue, that the government can't directly force vaccination. But additionally, there is the religious freedom issue. Our government is extremely limited in passing laws that violate people's religious convictions. freedom of religion is sacrosanct in America. So the courts have always allowed citizens to opt out of certain government requirements if these requirements violate personal religious beliefs. I mean, you can even opt out of mandated military service if you're a conscientious objector. And the courts have ruled that your belief doesn't even have to be backed by some religious denomination or creed as long as it's a sincerely held religious belief. And businesses are also required to make reasonable accommodations for religious beliefs and to apply the least strict requirement. And this is why Biden, in announcing these mandates, said you either get vaccinated or you get tested weekly. Legally, if there's another reasonable option, it must be allowed. So if your local government agency or business is mandating vaccines, they aren't even following the federal government initial guidance allowing for testing in lieu of vaccines. Like Mayor de Blasio, he's even more authoritarian than Washington. He is not allowing for the option of weekly testing. And of course, that's going to be challenged in courts. So since the courts are still upholding laws concerning religious objections, the only recourse left for employees who object to the vaccines is to ask for a religious or conscientious exemption. Now, without going into great detail on this, the problem is that the legal situation is not settled. The law is vague, and few people understand the principle behind the law. Judges and HR departments often feel the need to judge what is a sincerely held belief and what is not, what is merely an excuse to get out of doing something one doesn't like, and what's based upon religion. And that's very hard to determine. And like the unjust judge in Luke chapter 18, judges are secular and do not understand religious beliefs. The whole thing is one big mess, mainly because the courts have made the mistake in separating religious beliefs from all other beliefs, when in fact, all beliefs are religious in nature. Even if someone objects to the vaccine because he doesn't believe in harming his body, that's a religious belief because it involves metaphysical ethics. It's a belief based upon a worldview. Whether it's based upon humanism or Christianity, it is still a religious belief. And this fallacy of the courts is seen in their decision concerning removing religion from public schools. They removed Christianity because they considered it a religion, but allowed for humanism because they did not believe secular humanism was a religion. But humanism is a religion. Man is God. And the same error has arisen now in these religious exemptions for vaccines. The courts do not know how to define what is a religious belief and what's just a belief. So pretty much they're ruling however they want to rule on these exemptions. If the judge buys into the narrative that vaccine is the solution to this alleged crisis, he's going to rule against religious exemptions. If the judge doesn't buy into the narrative, he will rule for religious exemptions. It has very little to do with religion. Because if the judge is fearful of the virus and believes in a COVID zero policy, he will conclude that the government has a compelling interest for the good of the society to see everyone vaxxed, regardless of their religion. Just like everyone has to have a driver's license, or everyone has to have Social Security for the good of society. So everyone is doing what is right in his own eyes in this regard, Judges chapter 21, verse 25. But nevertheless, regardless of all of the mess and the confusion, Christians must still make the effort to petition the powers that be, the state, the courts, his employer, if he's going to refuse the vaccine. I have read a number of sample letters for religious exemptions. Some of them are completely anti-vax. stating that the plaintiff doesn't believe we should put any foreign substances into our body, and they appeal to Old Testament dietary regulations. The argument is that since there is a legal precedent that the state can't require Jewish people to eat pork, this should apply to vaccines. Quote, vaccines to me are analogous to what non-kosher food is to Orthodox Jews. No one requires anyone in the United States to consume a substance contrary to their faith. Medical experts may assert that non-kosher food and vaccines are completely healthy, but religious faith compels certain individuals to decline their consumption. I am one of those individuals, unquote. Well, that may work from a legal point of view, but I'm more interested in a biblical defense. You know, our belief in Acts chapter 10, verse 15, pretty much rules out the pork argument. Other letters of exemption simply state that the body is the temple of the Holy Spirit, and if there is a substance that has the possibility of being harmful, I therefore cannot in good conscience take this vaccine and play Russian roulette with my body. Almost all religious exemptions I have read include an objection to the vaccines because fetal stem cells are being used in the development of these vaccines. And therefore, being against abortion, one cannot support taking this vaccine, even if it means preserving one's own health. And that's a very good argument that should be included in any letter. An exemption letter can include multiple points of faith. Now, the use of fetal stem cells and fetal cells in the development of vaccines has been circulated in anti-vax circles for quite some time. And there's a lot of confusion on this, in that some people think that the vaccines themselves are being daily produced by fetal cells, or that the vaccines contain fetal cells. You know, I've never seen any science on this. These vaccines do not contain aborted fetal cells. But we do know that the pharmaceutical companies have tested their vaccines using the cells from aborted babies. In the providence of God, last month, Pfizer put out an internal memo that a whistleblower shared with the public. Quote, Senior Director of Worldwide Research, Vanessa Gelman, told staff not to talk about human fetal cells used in the company's vaccine program. From the perspective of corporate affairs, we want to avoid having the information on fetal cells floating out there. The risk of communicating this right now outweighs any potential benefit we could see, particularly with the general members of the public, who may take this information and use it in ways we may not want out there. So notice they want to control the narrative, that it's better to keep the information from the public for the greater good of people getting the vaccine. Well, she continues, we have not received any questions from policymakers or the media on this issue in the last few weeks, so we want to avoid raising this if possible. We have been trying as much as possible not to mention the fetal cell lines. One or more cell lines with an origin can be traced back to human fetal tissue that has been used in our laboratory tests associated with the vaccine program. Then Gelman goes on to write, Pfizer's chief science officer, Philip Dormitzer, wrote an email that said aborted fetus tissue was used in the company's vaccine program, but he instructed employees not to reveal that information to anyone and instead encouraged them to use the Pfizer talking point script that avoided the issue. That the Vatican Doctrinal Committee has confirmed that they consider it acceptable for pro-life believers to be immunized. Pfizer's official statement couches the answer well, and that is what should be provided in response to an outside inquiry. So it's a fact. The cells of aborted babies are used in testing these vaccines. And this is just grounds for refusing to have anything to do with COVID-19 vaccines. And it may be useful in any exemption letter to quote this source. Now, those who are pushing for the vaccine are already trying to knock down this fetal tissue argument with the what about argument. In an NPR article, when Conway Health, a large medical company in New York, had employees asking for religious exemption based on the fetal tissue in the vaccines, Conway sent out a letter listing 28 commonly used medicines that have also used fetal cells in their research, such as Tylenol, Motrin, Tums, Pepto-Bismol, Aspirin, Ex-Lax. The company then asked those who have religious objections to sign an affidavit stating that they will not use any of these other products. So you see the game they're playing. And the courts are playing the same game. Now, the answer to this is that these common drugs have been around way longer than abortion or the use of fetal cells in research. And there's a big difference between people testing these products after the fact and using fetal cells in their development, but really as Christians. If we discover fetal cells are being used in Pfizer's products, we will buy the generic version of those products from some other company. Also, in laws concerning religious exemptions, courts or private companies are not to sit as judges over the sincerity of people's religious beliefs. They are not to call in question the consistency of those beliefs. They are simply required to give accommodation to those religious beliefs, but many of the powers that be don't know that. So the first serious basis for religious exemption would be this use of aborted babies for vaccine development. And if you think about it, this really shows how our nation has lost its moral sensibility. I mean, the same people who believe it's okay to kill babies in the womb also think it's okay to use their body parts in treating adults. Reminds me of the movie The Island, where human clones were used for harvesting body parts. And it's a great pro-life movie. And the movie depicts that medical facility as being evil, but today in practice, it's being considered perfectly acceptable. Well, a second major biblical basis for religious exemption would be this false ideology of utilitarianism. This is an overlooked issue, but I believe it is probably the strongest argument against taking these vaccines. Christians do not practice utilitarianism. The CDC, on its own website, has reported that COVID-19 vaccines have resulted in about 17,000 deaths in 10 months. And about 25,000 people have been permanently disabled. I mentioned this to someone the other day, and they found that that was hard to believe because they never heard it. It's because there's a media blackout on those numbers, so that when people hear it for the first time, they consider it novel. I mean, if it's true, why isn't this widely known? Well, the same person said to me, it also can't just be from the vaccines. But no, these are reported instances from doctors, and they know if it's vaccine related. Another false response you'll hear is that these deaths are only because so many people are now being given vaccines. Well, every year there are millions of other vaccines given out to the public for measles, for flu, for whooping cough, for chickenpox, for shingles. More vaccines than the COVID-19 vaccine program. And there's usually only about 100 people dying every year from complications due to vaccines. But here with this COVID-19 vaccine, it's approaching 20,000. any other vaccine program would have been shut down given this many deaths. So why hasn't the COVID-19 vaccine program been shut down? Well, there's a lot of speculation here. Could be the fanatical desire in the medical establishment to promote this new mRNA technology. It could be the money flowing into the coffers of these pharmaceutical giants. And it's likely also that it's the result of a subtle change to our nation's moral consciousness, where now we believe in the ends justify the means. This philosophy of the greater good. And again, this is a philosophy that Christians vehemently oppose. The Moderna vaccine has been banned in three European countries because it has resulted in heart inflammations and death. And our own FDA responded to the report, quote, "The FDA continues to find that the known and potential benefits of vaccinations outweigh the known and potential risks for the Moderna COVID-19 vaccine." That's a moral decision, not a decision based upon science. That is a decision based upon utilitarianism. And as I mentioned the other week, when the CDC was deciding on whether to approve booster shots, the CDC's medical advisory panel voted 16-2 against approving booster shots. The director of the CDC, Rochelle Walensky, overruled the panel and approved the booster shots. Two of the members of the panel resigned in protest. And the reason Walensky gave for approving the boosters was not scientific or a medical reason. Her statement was as follows. "In a pandemic, even with uncertainty, we must take action that we will anticipate will do the greatest good." Again, that's not a matter of science. That's utilitarianism. What she anticipates will do the greater good. And again, Christians do not believe in the greater good ideology. We don't believe in sacrificing the lives of the few for the many. We believe in following the law of God. Utilitarianism is the official title for this philosophy of the greatest good for the greatest number of people. It's all about judging the rightness of an action based on its results. "If it works, do it," is another slogan in this regard. Now, on its face, it may sound like a good basis for ethics, but it's totally contrary to biblical morality, and it has been the basis for some of the most heinous violations of God-given human rights. This ideology has been around since the fall of man. The satanic temptation was to violate the direct law of God and eat the fruit because it was the greater good for Eve. She could become wise. And so right away, we see a major flaw in this philosophy. People are often wrong in determining what is the greater good. There is the temporal greater good, and there is the long-term greater good. Which do you choose? There is the greater good based upon what furthers God's authority, and there's the greater good for what furthers Satan and man's authority. Now, as far as modern philosophy, the founders of utilitarianism were men such as Jeremy Bentham, 1748 to 1832, and John Stuart Mills, 1806 to 1873. Jeremy Bentham's idea was that people make choices on the basis of minimizing pain and maximizing pleasure. Therefore, he concluded that this should be the basis for morals. Now, because that sounds so much like hedonism gone wild, John Stuart Mills modified utilitarianism to what is the good for the general society, for the general happiness of the public. And this philosophy became popular because at this time, atheist intellectuals were seeking to come up with some way to eliminate God from morals, even from origins. Darwinism was developed to explain man's existence apart from God. There was also Locke's social theory, social contract theory, which attempted to explain government apart from God. There was Adam Smith's theories of economics to explain the morals of economics without God. This was the Enlightenment. This was the age of humanism. Utilitarianism was put forth as a way to determine right from wrong without having to reference God's moral law, because these philosophers didn't believe in God in the Bible. And unfortunately, there are Christians today, influenced by their culture, who play into the same error by assuming that Christians should avoid using the Bible and arrive at moral injunctions based upon human reason and utility rather than Scripture, since the unsaved don't believe in the Bible. But in doing this, they're playing into the foundations of humanism, but that's a whole other discussion. So John Stuart Mill's, in rejecting divine revelation, God's moral law, said about utilitarianism, "It gave unity to my conception of things. I now had opinions, a creed, a doctrine, a philosophy, in one sense, a religion, the principal outward purpose of life." And utilitarianism today has become the foundation for ethics in our secular world. And it is driving COVID policy. COVID policy is not being driven by biblical morality because our society has abandoned God a long time ago. But here's the error of utilitarianism. It leads to the practice of the ends justifies the means. Anything people judge to be worthwhile can be justified. Hitler justified the Holocaust because the worthwhile end was the purity of the human race. Stalin slaughtered millions because it helped him in his attempt to achieve a communist utopia. And this is summed up in Stalin's motto, "You have to break a few eggs to make an omelet." And he was talking about literally breaking human heads. Citizens can cheat in an election if they view their candidate as better for society. The ends justify the means. Slavery can be justified because cheap labor may be better for the majority. So a majority of citizens could enslave the minority for a greater good. And a minority of citizens can be used as guinea pigs for medical experiments for the greater good. If a physician can save five people from death by killing one healthy person and using that person's organs for life-saving transplants, then the greater good implies that a doctor should kill one person to save five. Abortion is based on the philosophy of the greatest good, the Darwinistic ethic of the survival of the fittest. The greater good is the economic, social, emotional prosperity of the parents, not the life of the child. The use of fetal tissue in medical research is also based on the greater good philosophy. The greater good is the health of those living rather than the lives of these babies in the womb. Well, the truth is, the ends should never justify the means. The means themselves must be just and right. An action cannot be judged as good simply because it may lead to good consequences. The means must be judged by some objective standard of morality, namely the moral law of God, the law of nature and nature's God, regardless of the results. As I said earlier, the problem in utilitarianism is that mankind is not a good judge of the future. People can't foretell a future. They cannot predict outcomes very well. So this is where God has to step in and tell us what is the greater good through his law. Now, another erroneous outgrowth of utilitarianism is situation ethics, where right and wrong are determined by the situation, not by the law of God. And one of the devious examples that professors use in teaching utilitarianism is the example of a train running down the track, and you're at the switch. If you let the train go to the right, 10 people will die. And if you let the train go to the left, only one person will die. And everyone chooses to have the train go to the left and kill the fewest. And therefore, the conclusion is that the greatest good for the greatest number of people is the answer. However, the Christian solution may be to do nothing, to kill neither one nor 10, and hope that the people jump off the track when they see the train coming, or the Christian may take the option of stepping on the track and waving the train to a stop. You see, the lie in the illustration is that there are only two options. But in real life, it never works that way, does it? Satan offered to Eve only two options. Either take from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, or you're going to be stupid the rest of your life. When in fact, there was a better and a third option. Obey God and let him give the knowledge of good and evil in his time. The choice is not simply we have to vaccinate everyone and let 20,000 people die of the vaccine in order to save 300,000 from COVID. The choice can be let's get herd immunity with natural immunity and with 75% vaccinated, or let's work on better treatment for the disease, or just vaccinate the most vulnerable, or quarantine the elderly. It is not an either-or situation between vaccination or mass death. And typically, the way these things work out is that acting according to utilitarianism always results in worse results than would have been done otherwise. Because people are wrongly forced into unrealistic options. The greater good argument is known as, quote, the politician's dodge, the murderer's solace, the culprit's excuse, and several other metaphors, because it is like a scapegoat they run to every time they make a decision that affects many in a harmful way, claiming that it will benefit many others, unquote. And therefore, a written exemption for the COVID vaccine should include a religious objection to the humanist philosophy of utilitarianism. We should not play Russian roulette with human life. How you incorporate that into your request, I'll leave that up to you. Now, in closing, where is this in the Bible? Well, there are many texts where we see sin is justified in the name of the greater good. But the word of God says the moral law of God must come before man's perceived prosperity. In Christ's temptation, Satan tempted Christ with the greater good. You can save yourself if you turn these stones into bread. That would be the greater good for Jesus in the temporary situation. But Jesus answered and said, it is written, man shall not live by bread alone, but on every word that proceeds out of the mouth of God. Obeying God's moral law comes before our greater good. In the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus taught that what is truly the greatest good is missed by the majority. Matthew 7:13, enter through the narrow gate, for the gate is wide and the way is broad that leads to destruction, and there are many who enter through it. And in Luke chapter 15, Jesus even taught that if a man has 100 sheep, the greater good is not to stay with the 100 sheep, but to go after that one lost sheep. In that case, sacrifice the many for the one. And it's a greater good philosophy that put Jesus on the cross. John chapter 11. Caiaphas, the high priest, said to the Sanhedrin, you know nothing at all, nor do you take into account that it's expedient for you that one man die for the people, that the whole nation not perish. Notice Caiaphas' boasting. You know nothing at all. He thought he was the smartest person in the room because he came up with the greater good philosophy to be applied in Jesus' situation. Jesus must be put to death so that Israel doesn't perish. And what he was referring to was the opinion of these leaders that Jesus might inflame messianic fever in Israel, and the Romans will get upset and come and break up Israel. That's verse 48 of John chapter 11. If we let him go on like this, all men will believe in him, and the Romans will come and take away both our place and our nation. Well, that's an unproven assumption. But here we see the folly of utilitarianism. In the end, the very reason the Romans came in and wiped out the Jews in AD 70 was because they put Jesus to death. And they chose Barabbas, a political zealot, over Jesus, who was preaching personal repentance. The point, again, is the problem with utilitarianism is that mankind is always wrong in judging cause and effect. And therefore, he's unable to judge what is the greater good. So how about simply going with the law of God? Thou shalt not put an innocent man to death for the perceived good of the majority. So Christians can have a moral objection to a vaccine that does harm, even though some claim it's the greater good. Hold to your biblical convictions, and you will be vindicated. Thank you for listening today. Don't forget to subscribe, to share, to leave a comment below. And may Jesus Christ reign.